Welcome to the Scaling Through Structure podcast. I'm your host, Austin LaRoche, and we are here to learn about the winning systems that business leaders use to find success. If you believe in the power of organization, frameworks, and scalable processes, then this is the pod for you. Let's go. All right. I'm really excited about today's guest, Mikel Dia. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
Good, good. Now, you are the founder of Funnelytics. Let's start. Tell us a little bit about Funnelytics, what it is, and how did it get to where it is today?
Yeah. Let's take a step back. So Funnelytics is a platform that allows marketers to visualize kind of their customer journeys, their funnels, basically use a whiteboard to map all of the different strategies. And then what we've done is we've basically built an analytics layer on top. So you can basically overlay all of your data right there on top of that same strategy. So now you don't have to look at dashboards or spreadsheets or logging to all these platforms. You can actually merge both strategy, which is what most people use their right brain, you know, their more creative side on. And now you can overlay all of your data and see what's working, what's not, so that you don't have to look at it separately.
Okay. And when did we start Funnelytics?
I started Funnelytics in 2018. Was kind of the first 2 years were our kind of version of 1.0. Really, we launched Funnelytics 2.0 in 2022. But in the 2018 is when we kind of got off the ground and started selling lifetime licenses and it started expanding and growing from there. And lots of ups and downs and ride along the way, which has been a lot of fun.
Okay. And how many users do you guys have on the platform right now?
Oh man, we have a mapping tool. Our mapping tool has attracted over 300,000 people. It is free, or at least it was free for a very, very long time. And we have, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of customers that have used our paid products and courses and our actual analytics side and all that stuff.
Oh man, that's really cool. And so how did you build this whole process? Like, what was your tech stack to get Funnelytics where it is today?
So we iterated a lot, actually. We used different platforms for payment collection. We started off with Recurly, then we did Stripe, and then we tested another platform. So that created a bit of a mess, kind of trying to merge them back all together. So, but we use Stripe for our payment processing. We use HubSpot for our CRM. And again, we tried and tested a whole bunch of stuff, but we use HubSpot for our contacts, our email marketing, our sales process, etc. What else do we use? We use Zapier for a lot of our kind of automations and kind of Zaps. We obviously use Funnelytics for our marketing analytics and looking at what's working, what's not. Slack for our team and team communication. Our engineers use Jira for our like project management aspect of things for that side. What else? Circle. We use Circle for our community and courses and basically that aspect of things, which is more on the customer service side. Yeah, that kind of, it's pretty much our tech stack, I would say.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, there's a million things I can get into on the HubSpot side. You know, I run a HubSpot agency, and obviously I love the tool, and it solves a lot of those problems, especially when paired with Zapier. But I'm actually interested in Circle and the idea of building a community.
Sure.
Tell me about this community that you were able to build and how you've got people who are evangelists for what you're doing.
Yeah. So our first community was actually in Facebook. So in the first 2 years, we built our community in Facebook. We grew that to about 27,000 or so people. And Facebook was easy in the sense that everybody's already on there. So creating engagement is just a matter of posting really good content. And people, when they scroll through, are either going to engage or not engage with it, right? Building a community in a thing like Circle is actually quite challenging. It's hard to get people back into a platform that they're not by default logging into. Mm-hmm. However, it allows you to create a much more focused community. It allows you to create a much more focused kind of group in there. So in that sense, it's a little easier, because the problem with Facebook is that you end up kind of having your courses somewhere else. You end up having a lot of your calendar and your events somewhere else. And then you have like your engagement and your community inside of Facebook. Well, with a tool like Circle, it kind of brings all of those things together. You have your calendar, you have your courses, and there's lots of tools now that are coming out. School is one of them. There's Circle, there's Mighty Networks, I think, is another one. We just chose Circle because of the UI and how it interacts. They also have a mobile app. But it is challenging to create engagement when it's not inside of a place where people normally hang out. So how do you do it? There's a couple ways. Number one, there has to be an incentive for people to engage, right? So we've got to train people to engage inside of our community. One of the ways we do that is by using kind of what we call two-step value posts. The way those posts work is basically you share something of value with people and say, hey, I have this checklist, or hey, in our case, with Funnelytics, we build a lot of templates. And a lot of times what we'll do is we'll, instead of just giving people the template, we'll ask them to comment if they want a link to the template. Now in Circle, you can DM people and all that stuff. So what we'll do is comment and we'll DM you the link to that template. And we could just post the link, but then the problem is people will just click the link and not engage, and it won't create that aspect of trying to create, you know, that community feel. So by getting people to comment and forcing them to comment to get something that they want instantly creates that kind of engagement. You see it all the time in LinkedIn. You see it in Facebook. You see it in these different platforms. You see it on Twitter or X, I guess I should call it. That works really, really well. Second is you have to have somebody who's ultimately the community leader, who's there to push people, right? To tag them, welcome them, you know, go through that kind of process. Like, your community can't be about your business or your product. It has to be about the bigger picture for your audience. So by understanding what is the manifesto, what is the reason people should be part of this community, and then having your community leader reinforce that and push that and create content and posts that enforce that kind of manifesto, that outcome, really helps create engagement.
I love this. What is the manifesto of the community that you've built?
Interesting. Actually, let me read it for you. Let me just see if I can pull it up super quick. I wasn't prepared to have it, so hopefully I can pull it up on Keynote super quick and actually read it for you.
No worries. We start in some places.
Let me see.
We kind of just go where I find things to be interesting.
I know, you just kind of go where it goes. So let me load it up here and read it for you. So for us, our we service agencies, and we work with agencies and people who are performance kind of driven. So our manifesto post basically says this. So on behalf of the entire Funnelytics team, we want to say welcome to the Funnel Momentum community. So we called it Funnel Momentum, not Funnelytics, right? Because it's not about our product. It's about funnel and funnel momentum. And that's just the name we decided to choose. But anyways, on behalf of the entire Funnelytics team, we want to say welcome to the Funnel Momentum community. As marketers, our job is to help businesses convert strangers into loyal customers. Creating momentum with your digital marketing is the only way to generate consistent, predictable revenue. But we have to be smart. We have to be data-driven. We can't let non-measurable tactics win. Everything must be strategic and deliberate with a measurable goal in mind. That's the only way to create real momentum. Our job is to market great products and services by putting them in front of the right audience using advertising, content funnels, and data. This group is here to help you become a better marketer, right? So a couple things to note about that post and that welcome manifesto is, A, I didn't mention Funnelytics at all, other than like welcome from the entire Funnelytics team. So it's not about our product or our company. B, there's a common goal for the group. And the group is there to help people become better marketers, smarter marketers, more data-driven marketers. C, there's a common enemy for the group, right? And in our case, we're talking about non-measurable tactics. We're talking about social media marketing and content marketing and stuff that ultimately is just there as high level vanity and isn't helping you get a direct ROI or isn't measurable.
Oh, don't forget the PR placements. Come on, we can't let the PR companies off the hook.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The PR companies.
I can't hear just vanity metrics.
Totally, right? Yeah. And that's part of it. It's like these tactics are non-measurable. They're just kind of out there. And it's like, hey, let's put up an ad on TV. It's like, well, what happens when you spend $3 million on a Super Bowl ad? I know you and I can't afford that. And it's certainly, past that stage for brand awareness and all that stuff. But, for us and who we target and who we want to serve, that is a big part of it, right? And then we also attach kind of resources, like image and all that stuff, top resources get started to that same welcome post. But fundamentally, that is the manifesto post.
I think what you're doing is kind of the future. I don't know if you call it social media marketing, but it's more like the evolution. Because when you first said Facebook and you built this Facebook group, I know I'm a sample size of one. I was like, I feel like there's like four Facebook groups that keep that app from being deleted on my phone. Like, and that's it, right? Like almost everybody I know, like back when Facebook was great and everybody was posting and I saw everyone's life, it was great. But then it just kind of seemed to dwindle. And totally. And then being able to see where you can build that community in other places with so many more interactive elements, it kind of goes to something I used to try and get clients to do that no one ever would do, which is instead of creating a Facebook page for your company, creating the group. Sounds like you were smart enough to do.
It's not easy, though. I mean, it also requires a lot of work and it requires a lot of... it has to have a leader behind a group. Like it's very time consuming. It's not a you post and things happen. Like it's the same as building a podcast in a sense. Like you have to keep going for a long time. You've got to be smart and deliberate about it, but you can't just assume that you can put up an ad and see some results. It's going to take a long time. And then on the flip side is the same as a podcast. The minute you stop, it's over. The group doesn't do anything. Everybody starts getting quiet. So it's all driven by that one leader. And yes, you can have multiple moderators and all that stuff, but people join a group. Eventually it becomes part of the community. And like there's multiple leaders in the community and there's multiple reasons why. But people ultimately join a group because they want that common goal. And it takes a long time to get that group to a stage where it's self-perpetuating. To be honest, I was never able to make the Funnelytics group self-perpetuate. It was always very much tied to me. And if you look at our group now on Facebook, we've switched over to Circle. But if you look at our group now on Facebook, it's actually pretty quiet. It's dead because if I don't post, nothing happens really. So it's a very, very great strategy, but it's also something that you have to be dedicated to for a long time.
And that kind of goes to my next question, which I think a lot of people want to know, which is when you got to invest that time, what is that ROI of building community and what's the timeline for it as well? Because, you're investing all of that time to build these evangelists. And I think we all know it's the long-term play. And you even alluded, a lot of people cut out before they can get to the promised land. So tell me about what that ROI and community is like and why it is so important for people out there listening to keep going if they're trying to build these communities.
So ROI in a Facebook group or any community will not happen unless you are deliberate in actually monetizing your community. I think the biggest problem that people face when they build communities is that they assume that if I build it and I grow it, I'll make money from it. It's like you saying, well, let me just build a podcast, get all these views, but let me not sell sponsorship opportunities or whatever, right? And now you're sitting here and you're saying, well, hopefully the people who listen will become customers, hopefully, right? Well, that's not, unless you have call to actions, unless you've designed it in a way that, okay, it will drive people back to your offer, it won't really do much. So you've got to have some sort of sales motion inside of your group. There's got to be a purpose, and there's got to be a deliberate aspect of trying to create true revenue from your group. And the way you do that is by, again, engaging with the people in the group and then pushing them to some sort of call to action that is going to drive conversations, or maybe setting up to a webinar or whatever it may be. The easiest way is always like a some sort of sell by chat. So I'm going to engage with people in the group. They're going to, you know, comment, or they're going to say, hey, I'm interested in this particular thing. So we're going to send them a DM. And once we direct message them, it opens up the door to have a conversation. And now we can either invite them to, if they're the right fit, we invite them to a discovery call, or we invite them to join a webinar, et cetera. And that's when we can start to really, truly measure, okay, how many people signed up to our webinar from this Facebook group? Or how many conversations and discovery calls did we generate from this Facebook group? Or if we're selling a low enough product, or a low ticket enough product, how many conversations or people came from the Facebook group and actually went to this order page and actually bought, right? And we can measure that stuff, but if it's not deliberate, it won't ever translate into anything. But I'll give you an example. Like, I started my Facebook group for Funnelytics in December 2017. In February 2017 is when I sold my first lifetime license to Funnelytics to our founding members. The group had 3,000 people. So we were able to grow it to about 3,000 people in the span of 2 months. That was using advertising. So we used paid ads, spent about 10 grand on paid ads to get people to our free mapping tool, push them to our Facebook group. About 3,000 out of the $10,000 in spend actually ended up joining the Facebook group. I was engaging with them for literally every single day, probably multiple times a day, commenting, responding to comments. Like, I was fully active for 2 whole months before I ever tried to sell anything. However, when I did open up our first lifetime deal, we ended up making about $208,000 in 48 hours. So we sold about 300 people at $700, and it happened because I built so much goodwill, so much reciprocity, so much, I gave them so much value, but I had to ask for a sale. Like, it would have been $0 if I didn't actually, you know, have a call to action there. So you have to think about your group as not just a community aspect. You have to think about your group as a way to engage and convert customers.
And beyond the group, I mean, this is such great marketing advice, right? You're hitting the nail on the head. And everything we beg our clients to do, right, is, you know, really invest in providing that value and understand what that is. And I think you had a time investment of two months, if I remember hearing this correctly. And I'm sure you were doing a few other things other than just providing a ton of value inside of that Facebook group. But the day you turned it on and you turned the product on, there was over $200,000 coming your way in 48 hours. Like, that is a testament to what really strong marketing is and the patience that is required of providing value, you know, that go-giver mentality. Are you familiar with the book?
Totally.
Yeah. Totally. So really, really cool, cool story there. So let's talk a little bit about structure and where that's kind of coming into play. You told us a little bit about your tech stack. How do you structure your weeks? How do you structure your marketing and sales efforts to be able to continue to grow Funnelytics?
How do I structure my weeks personally, or how do I structure the marketing team and Funnelytics? Because those are two very different things.
And they're going to be two different questions. Let's start with the marketing and sales, and then I want to hear about you personally.
Okay, so marketing and sales is it's a cadence. So the way we look at Funnelytics and the way we look at growth is we have a few tactics that are operating. So we've got our SEO and content kind of engine. We've got our paid advertising kind of engine. We've got our in-app kind of product marketing engine. We've got our email marketing engine. So we basically have these engines. And the way that I look at I'm very systemized in my approach, because I always look at it as, okay, well, how are these engines operating in a kind of cadence, in a frequency? So we know we're posting for the content stuff on a consistent basis. We post about 4 times long form articles per month. We use SEO, and we have an agency to kind of manage that process and that cadence. And that's a big thing that we do, is we always, always look at experts to do one thing. One thing that I think is especially in the marketing side, a mistake that people make is that they will use multiple people for multiple things. So a person will come in and be like, I'm the marketing manager. I'm going to write content, and I'm going to write emails, and I'm going to do this. And the problem with that is you tie a person across multiple tactics when potentially you may want to cut off that tactic or ramp up that tactic. And then that person becomes the bottleneck. So I like to look at everything in silos. I like to basically say, okay, we're going to have a content engine, and that content engine requires an SEO, a writer, all of this stuff. So either we're going to hire an agency that has all of this in-house, or we're going to build this in-house, because what we don't want is one person half-assing it because they don't have the time to go all in on this particular strategy, right? So when we build that strategy, then we set a kind of a cadence around this experiment, and we say, okay, how long do we want to run this experiment for? And what is the outcome that we expect out of this particular experiment? And everything's an experiment. So let's say we're doing SEO. Okay, cool. Well, we're going to go and do this for 8 months. And within 8 months, we're going to target all these keywords, and we expect to rank for these, and we expect to start generating traffic. And we expect that this is going to generate us X amount of trials for Funnelytics, right? So we're going to go and budget that and run that experiment for 8 months and then measure the results. But by siloing it and by saying, okay, yeah, this experiment is run by this team, if after 8 months, we're like, you know what, this really just isn't working, and this isn't, so I can cut that off. Now, obviously that sounds brutal, but as a business owner, that's kind of how you have to think about it, right? Yes, mm-hmm. There's people there, but it's also, they're there to do that one thing and to get results within that one thing. So if we're going to run a YouTube channel or whatever it is, we're thinking about it in these kind of pods, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that we're always juggling, right? Is like bringing in specialists and then knowing that there are those people who are like probably like yourself, like, you know, enough to be dangerous, you know, enough to properly manage and measure. Right.
Yep.
But you don't know as much about SEO as your SEO guy.
Totally.
I know I've clients who've come to me and they're like, well, we're looking for somebody who's going to be like our SEO person, but also do our Google ads.
Stop. Exactly. Stop right now.
Not the same person.
No, they're not.
You're unicorn hunting. Not happening.
And even if you were like, even if you were to find that person, the problem is you're having that person divide their time. And one thing I've always looked at is you can look at your time and you can say, let's say I've got 100 units of energy, or something is going to take me 3 months to do, right? If I go all in on it, it's going to take me 3 months of effort, right? 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, et cetera. Well, here's what happens. If I take two things, and both of those things are going to take me 3 months, and I take one person to operate both of those things, that means that both of those things, in order to get to that validation, will both be 6 months, right? Because that one person is now saying 50% of my time here, 50% of my time here. So I'm now running these two experiments in parallel, but instead of them taking 3 months, they're now going to take 6 months. Now, I understand that you have to duplicate your resources in order to run it 50-50, in order to run each one of them at full capacity. However, if you don't, what you're basically saying is, would you rather wait 6 months to understand if one of these two is working, or would you go all in on one, prove or invalidate or invalidate that experiment, and then move on to the next one, right? Because if you validate in 3 months and it works, great, keep that one running. Now you can go and start looking at the next experiment and the next experiment. So I always think of it as, even if you do have that unicorn, that unicorn maybe should be your top level marketing manager or VP or CMO who understands everything, but that person should never be operating multiple strategies and multiple tactics simultaneously. It's just a waste. It's a waste of time.
I think that definitely makes sense when you're talking about full-time employees.
Yeah,
I think one of the things that we're always like trying to juggle when we're looking for resources and specialists is time versus cost versus impact. Because, you know, as we all know, 3 months of one person who might be a little bit less expensive might not even be as impactful as 1 month with somebody who costs a little more.
100%.
I feel like that's one of these things that you're always trying to juggle. It's like these bets that we always make as entrepreneurs, right?
That's all it is.
Can this person really get what I want in 2 months, even though they're three times more expensive than this person I know who can deliver it in like 6 to 8 months, you know? I don't know. It's part of the game, right? It's part of the fun part.
It's part of the game. It's part of the hard part. It's in general, you have to be willing to know that this is going to happen. Like, there's some bets that you're going to make that aren't going to work out, and there's some that are going to work out. Now, you should always, always opt for A players. I've never had an experience where a C or B player outperformed an A player when it came to a specific tactic. So what I mean by this is very simple. Someone who's done this many, many times before and can do it with their eyes closed and knows exactly what to do in order to run an SEO engine, let's say we're talking about SEO, and they may cost, let's call it $150,000 a year, versus somebody who is just learning SEO, is smart, but is learning SEO and costs you $80,000 a year, $75,000, whatever it is, for simplicity's sake, you are always going to pay for the learning experience of that person who's learning. And that is going to come in form of money. And, well, maybe you're paying them the salary, but it's going to come in the form of time, which in essence is money. Right. So like you're going to pay either way. You're either going to pay for them to learn and make mistakes on your dime, or you're going to pay for the person who already knows how to do it, pay them more. Right. And it's your call. Which one do you want to pay for? You want to pay for this guy who's hungry and will learn and you know, you'll be their sounding board or their experiment in a sense. Or do you want to pay for this one who knows what they're doing, but you're still going to have to pay more regardless?
I mean, gosh, that hits home. I feel like I've been in that situation so many times, and I'd love to tell anybody listening, like, always do this, but investing in those people, sometimes 100%. All of a sudden they become better than the person who knows it right now. Totally.
And it's about, especially if they're hungry, right? Especially if they're hungry and they're driven and all that stuff, and they're smart and they're ambitious. Yeah. Sometimes, you know what, bring them in. You're going to have to wait a year before that you see the results that the person who would take 6 months. But after the year, that person's going to be crushing it for you. and they're not necessarily going to be paid the same amount. So in general, but people is tough. People management is in general is not easy.
I could probably do a second podcast on managing people, but
Yeah.
to your point though, I do want to say like one thing I always say is like you can't teach tenacity. Like that's one area. I've had people on my team who have been so tenacious that maybe they made some slip ups or some errors, and I'll find another area for them because like that is the one thing you can't teach. And somebody who wakes up every day wanting to like literally like attack every problem, that you can manage them, but you can't teach people who are smart but not as motivated to be like them. So I try and
Totally.
always try and find a place for tenacity. Okay, I want to go back to the second part of the question. I want to know about you. Obviously you're an entrepreneur, you run multiple businesses, right?
Yep. No,
And
I only run Phonelix. My
only
wife,
Phonelix.
yep, only Phonelix. My wife has we have a real estate business, but that's my wife who runs it. I'm only Phonelix.
All right. Well, you've got a family, obviously. So
I do.
how do you structure your days, weeks, months so that you can, for lack of a better term, have it all, man?
Yeah, so the first thing is I have a very great assistant who helps me structure a lot of this. And we have a pretty robust system in terms of how we look at my calendar, how we look at my tasks, and how we schedule kind of things out. So the first thing is my calendar, if I were to show it to you, is fully blocked out, meaning every space of my calendar has something in it, whether that thing is a call or it's, let's say, focus time, or even like my sleep time, my family time. So basically, if I look at my entire calendar, I can see, and everything's color coded. So like I'm looking at my calendar right now, I have like lights out in gray, from I have it 10 p.m. until 5:45 whenever I get up, right? And then I have like this section where it's my morning time, and basically that's all in green. So all the way up until about seven something, then I have family time because that's when my kids get up and I'm present there. And then I have like a block of time from 8 a.m. until 9, which is my 80/20 activities. So my assistant knows that any big core task that like will move the needle, that's when I like to do them. So I usually block out an hour to just get that stuff done. So my assistant, we use Google Calendar and then we use tasks. She'll just put in the tasks that she knows that fit there. Every morning at 7 a.m. On Slack, she sends me, "Hey, Mikhail, here's your agenda for today and here's your to-do list for today." So she'll break that down for me. And then she'll put like in brackets, like, big your 80/20 list. And then ultimately, the rest of my day is either going to be calls with my team. It's going to be some focus time. It's going to be sales calls or client calls. It's going to be, support calls or success calls with my team, et cetera. So, based on this, so like for example, now we have this call, it's been blocked out. And then around it will either be tasks or we'll be like, okay, we'll block out a focus time. And then, so my assistant basically manages everything for me. I just look at my calendar to see what do I have to do, and that's it. That's basically what it comes down to. And then she clears my inbox for me.
That's awesome. No, I think that's really, really important. And I haven't heard of a calendar that detailed going all the way to the sleep. I dig it. I think that's awesome. I guess my question is, what happens when a meeting ends 15 minutes early? Do you just not know what to do? Do you walk around aimlessly around town until
It's a good
time?
question. But so like truthfully, like even though it's all blocked, it's not as though I'm sitting here and being like, okay, this task needs to like I've got to do this task right away or whatever it is. Like very often, like right now I have about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 tasks that are set up during like my focus time later this afternoon. Will I get to all of them? Probably not. So what my assistant does is that tomorrow morning, she just moves them, right? And then she kind of, she looks at them and she says, okay, like this one has a deadline. A bunch of these don't have deadlines. So she'll just move them to the next. And a lot of times like things just kind of escalate. And if I do have a free time, like, you know, I'll sit there and be like, yeah, I have free time. I'm going to chill out and, you know, take a break, do some stretching or watch a YouTube video for 15 minutes or something like this before my next call or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think I made that joke because I feel like that time is the time where I get into like hyper slack off mode, for lack of a better term. I'm on, you know, I'm on Twitter, I'm watching the YouTube video.
Totally.
I'm like, meeting was supposed to be 15 minutes longer. It ended early. Like, give yourself some grace and enjoy yourself. But I'm jealous of the people who can look at that those eight tasks and just go, all right, which one can I do before the next meeting? Which one can I do?
Oh, man. I can tell you that right now, I am not that person. I can tell you that the reason I have this system is because I'm ultimately lazy and I don't really want to do it. So if I don't have this system, because I'm much more just strategic in general. I like to think and I like to, you know, put something on a piece of paper and start thinking about, okay, what's next, et cetera. And I can get very, very easily distracted in that. So my team sometimes hates me, especially if I go on vacation. My team hates me when I come back because I've spent all that time thinking of new ideas and new things that I want to test. What this does is basically gives me a system to not give me the headspace to like start saying, hey, you know what we should test tomorrow? And the team's like, whoa, wait, what do you mean tomorrow? I've already got this long list of things to do, right? So it allows me to be like, all right, I'm focused. I got these things to handle. I'll stay focused. I know the team is working on these things. We've got our quarterly meetings. We've got our monthly meetings. We've got our weekly touch points. So I'll bring that up at that time.
Do you run on EOS?
Yep. So we basically look at things in 3-month increments. I don't really plan for the year. I think yearly planning is a little bit of a waste. I think it's things adjust too quickly and you need to. So we look at it in quarterly increments. We still have a goal of like, where do we want to be in like 12 quarters from now? So we still have a high level vision and we establish that vision and we kind of break it up into 12 quarters. But basically we look at things in quarterly increments and we say, all right, we have a quarterly meeting, then we have a monthly touch point on that. And that quarterly meeting is higher level. What are we trying to accomplish this quarter? What are the pillars? What are the key initiatives? Then we have a monthly kind of touch point to kind of look at our metrics, et cetera, to understand like how far are we? Where are we in that sense? What key initiatives have we completed and not completed, et cetera? And then we'll look at weekly results and have a weekly touch point. And then with some teams, most teams will have like a daily huddle. I'll be part of some of the daily huddles depending on where I need to be. So I'm usually very involved on the product side, the success side if we're trying something new. And then yeah, the team runs.
And that's why I absolutely love talking about structure with everybody, because I feel like so many entrepreneurs, I'm very much the way you are, extreme on the vision scale. Give me a week away and I'm coming back with a million ideas and everyone's like, oh my God, wait, how do we organize them all? And I think these systems that we put around ourselves really help us thrive keep us from ourselves in some ways, right? Like it helps so that the good parts of these ideations and this excitement and this vision can actually get accomplished by the teams that we're able to build. It does not happen without us protecting ourselves from one another. Well, hey,
totally.
Mikel, this was awesome. I loved it, man. We were talking, we got into community. We were talking people problems, your calendar. I loved it all, man. You got a lot of cool things going for analytics, and I'm so happy that you joined the show today. Thanks so much.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. And where can our audience find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is kind of my tool of choice. That's probably the best place for you to send me a note.
All right. Sounds good. I connected with you earlier today.
Cool.
All right, man. Well, hey, I'll talk to you later. And thanks again.
All right. Chat soon.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Scaling Through Structure podcast. This pod was produced by Sabrina. If you liked what you heard, do us a favor and subscribe or leave a 5-star review on the platform of your choice. If you want to be a guest and share with the world your winning system, head over to podcast.atakinteractive.com/guest and fill out your information accordingly. To connect, send me an invite at www.linkedin.com/in/AustinLaRoche. That's AustinLaRoche. We appreciate each and every one of our listeners, but especially you. Until next time, I'm Austin LaRoche, and we will see you soon.